ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय परं वृणीष्व भद्रं ते ऋते कैवल्यम् अद्य न एक एवेश्वरस्थस्य भगवान् विष्णुरव्यया All good fortune to you. Now, please choose a benediction from us. Anything but liberation, since only the infallible Supreme Lord Vishnu can bestow that. Evam ukta sabai daivam. Abhivandya Mahayasha Ashayishta Guha Vishto Nidraya Devadattaya. Addressed thus, King Muchakunda took his respectful leave of the demigods and went to a cave where he lay down to enjoy the sleep they had granted him. Purport. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the following lines from an alternate reading of this chapter. These lines are to be inserted between the two halves of this verse. Nidram eva tato vabre sadajas ramakarshita Yakashchin mama nidraya bhangam kuryas surotama sahi bhashmi bhaved ashu tatoktascha suraistada swapam yatam yumadyetu bodhayetvam achetanaha satvaya dristamatrastu bhashmi bhavatu natatkshanat. The king, exhausted by his labor, then chose sleep as his benediction. He further stated, O best of the demigods, may whoever disturbs my sleep be immediately burned to ashes. The demigods replied, So be it, and told him, That insensitive person who wakes you in the middle of your sleep will immediately turn to ashes simply by your seeing him. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 51, The Deliverance of Muchakunda, Text 20. And 21. The background of this story. Krishna and Sri Balaramji, after performing their most intimate, beautiful pastimes of Sri Vrindavan Dham, almost every day killing various asuras, at the same time revealing to the world the highest, most confidential pastimes of love between Sri Krishna and the devotees, the gopis and gopas of Sri Braj Bhumi. Krishna, by his own will, went to Mathura.
Paritranaya sadhunam binashaya cha duskritam dharma samstampanarthaya sambhavami shuke shuke. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells that he comes to this world to free it from demoniac forces, to reestablish principles of religion and protect those who are pious. In all of the various incarnations that Krishna takes, he fulfills these purposes. But our scriptures tell us once in a day of Brahma, on a very rare occasion, all the incarnations of that one truth enter into the original form of Lord Sri Krishna, who descends from Goloka Vrindavan to especially reveal the pastimes of Vrindavan. And in doing so, to reveal to the world the highest treasures of prem or spiritual love. So that was Krishna's internal purpose. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita reveals Krishna's minds, that he appears in so many ways and establishes true religious principles. But everywhere people are worshipping Krishna as the all-powerful absolute truth with great reverence. But the service that is most pleasing to Krishna is when it is with an intimacy beyond the reverence of worshipping him as the supreme, all-powerful God of gods, where we could love him as a friend, as a parent, or a lover. So Krishna came in his Vrindavan Leela. At the same time, in Mathura, the Yadus were being persecuted, tortured, and restricted in so many ways by Kamsa, who was an asura, a terrorist, a horrible person. And especially he was creating so much pain to Devaki and Vasudev and Ugrasena, who were Krishna's own devotees, who appeared as his own, as the son of Vasudev and Devaki. Akrura brought Krishna from Vrindavan to Mathura. And there in the wrestling arena, Krishna finally gave liberation to Kamsa, Chanara, Mustika, and so many others. Kamsa's wives, they were so broken-hearted, lost. Now they are widows. They went to their father, who was one of the most influential, powerful rulers of the world. His name was Jarasandha. He was one of Kamsa's most powerful allies. This little cowherd boy came from Vrindavan and killed our husband. Kamsa, whose each of his arms were more strong than 10,000 elephants, who had conquered all the asuras, who had conquered practically the whole earth, along with Jarasandha and his other allies. And single-handedly, this boy, who was not even 12 years old, killed him, made his daughters widows. Even, and this is one of the mysteries of human nature, even such a demoniac, cruel-hearted tyrant as Jarasandha still had such soft-hearted love for his daughters. He was outraged. He has made my daughters widows. They are crying. They are weeping. He must be destroyed. As a Kshatriya, he vowed he would not only kill Krishna and Balaram, he would exterminate the entire race of the Yadu dynasty. He gathered together 23 Akshohini divisions of soldiers. That is a massive army. This is how powerful he was. He could bring together an army like this instantly, just by his command. Millions of soldiers, elephants, horses, weapons, chariots. Leading the charge, they attacked Mathura. And Krishna and Balaram, with their little armies of the Yadus, they came out to attack and defend the city. And Krishna and Balaram, how they could shoot arrows, so graceful and beautiful, but they filled the whole sky with arrows. And very soon, the entire army of Jarasandha, extremely enormous army, was finished. Then Balaram captured Jarasandha and was about to tie him up like an animal. Jarasandha was extremely humiliated. For someone like Jarasandha, if he would have died in the battlefield, there would have been some valor. But to be left to live when everybody else was annihilated, and then to be about to be tied up like an animal, is really an insult. And then to even make the insult even worse, Krishna told Balaram, don't bother with him, just let him go. Now, for an ordinary person, that would be a blessing. He let me live. But for Jarasandha, that was worse, millions of times worse than letting him live. He let him live. Worse than dying. So he was just released. He was so insulted. He decided to perform years of tapasya to get revenge. But then other kings, so-called well-wishers, told him, you can't waste all this time with just tapasya. You should attack him again. Just get another army and attack. It's not that Krishna and Balaram and the Yadus were better than you. Actually, you are the greatest. It was just your karma. You were supposed to lose that battle. Go again. So instead of going to do tapasya to get powers, he gathered another army, huge army, and attacked Mathura. And again, Krishna did the same thing. And again, just everybody else, he delivered. And then he just let Jarasandha go. And the reason Krishna did this is because it was very expedient. Because Krishna came when Bhumi Devi appeared like a cow on the banks of the ocean of milk, along with Brahma and the Devas. She was saying that there was limitless demoniac armies and warriors that were traversing her and causing her such pain. So Krishna came to free Bhumi Devi, free the earth of this. So instead of him having to go everywhere looking for all these people, Jarasandha was bringing them right to his house in Mathura. He would just get all the demons and bring them one army after another after another. It was like an assembly line of Krishna. Paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya chaduskritam. It was a vinashaya chaduskritam assembly. They were just coming and coming, and Krishna 17 times consecutively Jarasandha brought massive armies, and Krishna delivered them all. Now one may ask, why didn't he have the intelligence? He's been defeated 17 times, and every time he's insulted, I'm just, okay, you go. We don't care for you, out. Because that's the nature of envy. When you have envy, you lose your intelligence. Logic, rational, philosophical conceptions, they vanish. We learn to justify anything. These six enemies, lust, anger, arrogance, greed, envy, they put us in such an illusion that we just lose our intelligence. Yayato vishayam pungsam. The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells, when we fall prey to these anarthas, our intelligence is lost. We lose the memory of what really is for my well-being and what isn't. Sometimes we see when people are intoxicated, they do things that they really would never do if they weren't intoxicated. They just lose their sense of judgment. Well, things like anger and lust and envy, they're like an intoxication. They cause us like a cloud. So he wasn't saying that Krishna's better than me. He and Balaram practically single-handedly have annihilated 17 of my armies. He was convinced that he was going to defeat Krishna. It was just his karma, some technicality. That's why he was losing. And he was thinking he was right. And he was thinking Krishna was bad. Kamsa was a nice person. And Krishna unfairly defeated him. Yes. Kamsa was just on his raised platform, and Krishna just jumped up without even, and didn't even give him proper warning. So he was rationalizing Kamsa as being very good and Krishna being very evil. This is his consciousness. So it's a great lesson. These anarthas like envy and anger, they cloud, so you really can't see things rationally. And so often people in world history, we find when they get this power and this arrogance, and they're infatuated by it, then when they fall prey to things like anger and lust and envy, they think they can get away with anything. And they can cause massive damage to the entire planet. We find historically the worst evil that has ever been done in the world by dictators like Jarasandha and others are always rationalized and justified as being for the good. Hitler massacred some millions of innocent men, women, and children. It was all rationalized. He was convinced. He was cleansing the earth. How could he not see it? The screams, the tortures, the death. His heart was so hardened. He just by that arrogance and envy. So after 17 times, he gathered the 18th army that was about to attack Mathura again. Meanwhile, Kalyavan, it's a whole story. He was born especially for the purpose of fighting against the Yadus. And he was extremely powerful. No one could stand against him. He had supernatural abilities to fight. And he was a Yavana, and he gathered an incredible army of millions and millions of soldiers who were all like him. But nobody could stand before him in battle, because he was not an ordinary person. But Narada Muni, he knows Krishna's plan. Kalyavana found out from Narada Muni that the only person who could possibly face him in battle was Krishna and the Yavana and the Yadus. So Kalyavana, he on one side of Mathura, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, I think he had 30 million soldiers. And they were marching rapidly toward Mathura. And Krishna and Balaram saw, and they understood that Jarasandha was about to attack from the other side with a huge army. So if they go out to fight with Kalyavana, what's going to happen when the others attack? So they wanted to create a safe haven for the residents of Mathura, the Yadus. So by their incredible divine will, they did all this just in a matter of minutes. They created a fort in the ocean that they called Dwarka. And it was even better than Mathura, because they created it themselves with the help of Vishwakarma. Beautiful gardens, wonderful palaces, a fortress in the ocean surrounded by walls, so that when they went out to perform their services, the citizens of the Yadu dynasty would be happy and protected. So here comes Kalyavana, and here comes Jarasandha soon to come. And while all that's happening, Dwarka is created. And it's nighttime, and all the Yadu dynasty go to sleep. By Krishna's mystic power, they went to sleep in Mathura and woke up in these magnificent palaces in Dwarka. They looked around. It was astounding. It's not like they had to, you know, and everything they owned was in their house. They didn't have to move. All they did is go to sleep and wake up. Can you imagine? It was the entire dynasty of the Yadus, you know, countless people. They all just woke up. Nobody had to stand in lines to take trains or chariots. And they just were so nice. Meanwhile, while they were in Dwarka, Krishna comes out of Mathura. Now there's nobody even in the city. And he has his plan. Krishna can serve so many plans at one time. None of the Yadus are even with him. He even tells Balaram, you stay back. And here is 30 million warriors in Kalyavana, right? So Krishna just leaves. Kalyavana's warriors, they were finished. But Krishna just, without any weapons, just walks out. And Kaliyavana, he's ready to fight Krishna, but he sees Krishna doesn't have any weapons. He doesn't have a chariot, nothing. So as a Kshatriya, he gets off his chariot. He puts down his weapons to fight Krishna with his hands. Because that's the way Kshatriyas are. They do things fairly. And Krishna walks right up to him, and he's ready to fight. Then Krishna just passes by and walks by him. Kaliyavana, what is this? You just walked by me. He started cursing Krishna, chastising Krishna, insulting Krishna. Krishna just keeps walking. Now, this was really an insult. So Kaliyavana went, chased after Krishna to fight him. And Krishna was just walking, and Kaliyavana was running. Krishna was walking, and Kaliyavana is running. He's running really fast. And he's just behind Krishna so that he can just molecules away from touching him. But he can't touch him. He not once was even able to touch Krishna. And they're going for miles like this. And he's screaming at Krishna, cursing him. You are a coward. You're running from battle. And Krishna's just walking. And he's trying to grab him, but he just... No matter how much he reached out and he ran and he jumped, he just was not able to touch Krishna. And he was struggling and straining, running, and Krishna was just walking just nicely. So Krishna walked up a mountain and into a cave. It was a dark cave. Kaliyavana comes into the cave, and he sees, it was dark, he couldn't see the details, but he saw what he thought Krishna to be sleeping on the floor of the cave. Now this is really an insult. He's giving no credibility to him. He's just walking away from him like he's nothing. He won't even look back and say, you know, forget you. He didn't even say a word to Colin. He just totally neglected him as if he didn't exist. And here he is, probably the most powerful man on earth outside of Krishna, who's conquered everything. And now Krishna's sleeping. He doesn't care anything. He just goes to sleep. He was so angry, outraged, insulted, that with great force, he kicked the person on the ground, thinking it was Krishna. But it wasn't Krishna. It was someone else. And that person, he woke up. And he looked around and he saw this enormous form of Kaliyavana standing in front of him. And he glanced at him. As soon as he glanced at him, a fire ignited inside Kaliyavana's body and he burned to ashes. Quite astonishing. And then the person looked around and he saw Krishna. Krishna was so beautiful. He asked who Krishna was. Krishna was standing before him in his form of Vishnu with four arms. Beautiful lotus eyes, complexion like a monsoon cloud. His body was so effulgent that he was lighting up the cave. Parikshit Maharaj is asking Shukadev Goswami, who is this person? And it's being explained here. His name was Muchakunda. Muchakunda was a king who had a beautiful palace, wonderful family, great wealth. His kingdom had no rivalry. He was safely happy with his citizens. He was so strong and so intelligent and so compassionate, there was just no problems in his kingdom. But the demigods, the devas, they were being attacked by the asuras, and they could not withstand the strength of the demons. So they approached Muchakunda. There's nothing we can do. Can you protect us? Muchakunda was such a selfless person, knowing the devas to be Krishna's devotees. He fought to protect the devas for a long, long time. And in doing so, the asuras could not defeat the devas as long as Muchakunda was protecting them. And eventually, Kartikeya was born of Parvati and Shiva. So now the devas had their own general. So they told Muchakunda, you can go, now we don't require your service anymore. But we want to offer you any benediction you like. The devas were extremely grateful. Muchakunda understood what he was doing. The sacrifice he made, the devas told him, because you have been fighting in our abodes, you have been in our time zone. And you've been fighting so long, and in our time zone, you could live so long. But you should know, in the time that you have fought, all your queens, all your children, all your ministers, all your friends, everything you had, it's all gone. By the power of time, the limitless power of time, everything that was dear to you is finished. They've all died. Generations and generations have all died. So now he's done his service. It's not that he could go home and to his family. Nothing existed that he had, and no one. So that was his willingness to protect Krishna's devotees, the devas. So they asked him, because you have made such a sacrifice for us, we will give you any benediction you desire. We can give you anything and everything in the world. The only thing we cannot give you is liberation. Because only Vishnu can give liberation. So Muchakunda, he had good realization of the nature of this material world. Everything that was dear to him was lost. But he did not sleep for years and years and years. That was his sacrifice. That was his devotion. That was his service. He was not just doing it as a matter of duty. He really put his heart into it. He was defending the devas without sleeping. Guarding, fighting, defending. If he went to sleep, something could go wrong. This is how meticulous he was in his service. But now that he didn't have to do it anymore, it was like all catching up to him. When you're really in the passion of getting something done, sometimes you don't realize what's happening to your body. So now that his service was finished, he was really feeling tired. He hadn't slept in ages. So he told the demigods, if you want to give me any benediction, just give me the benediction that I could go to sleep. And if anyone tries to wake me up, they will burn to ashes. Now, why would anyone want a benediction like that? Yes? For a couple reasons. One is he really wanted to sleep without. And, you know, in this world, there's always somebody who wants to wake you up. And he wanted to make sure, because, you know, if something happened with Kartikeya, then Indra would come and say, Muchukunda, we need you again. But now there's no way Indra was going to bother him again, because he would. All the demigods knew if we try to call on him again, we're going to be burned to ashes. So he was assuring himself of good sleep. But ultimately, he was a great devotee. He was truly a devotee of the Lord. And Krishna, who is in his heart, had a purpose to serve through him. This is Krishna's lila. He asked for this incredible benediction because Krishna wanted him in the Srimad Bhagavatam, teaching us great lessons. So Krishna knew his beloved devotee Muchukunda was sleeping, and he wanted him to wake up. And Krishna didn't want to wake him up, because Krishna wanted to honor the demigod's benediction. Krishna is always honoring demigod's benedictions in so many ways. Even Hiranyakashipu, he had to do so many ways to deliver Hiranyakashipu while keeping intact Brahma's blessings. So Krishna wanted to wake up Muchukunda because Muchukunda was his dear devotee. So Krishna went right to the cave where he was sleeping and then went off to the side, knowing that Kalyavana was going to see Krishna. I mean, he sees Muchukunda as in his misconception. So in this way, Kalyavana, how to get rid of somebody like that? He was delivered from the earth. And Muchukunda's before Krishna. And he's offering beautiful prayers to Krishna. He's telling Krishna who he is and what his past is. And these are beautiful prayers. Because in these prayers, Muchukunda is describing the nature of the world. Because now Krishna is offering him any benediction. And Krishna can offer him every type of liberation. Muchukunda's, he's already seen the power of time. Everything that was near to and dear to him was just washed away by the waves of time. That even the greatest king sitting on enormous elephants, who conquers all directions, who has the best of weapons, who has all sorts of mystic powers, it's just a matter of time. That power of Kala, where that person is just going to be eaten by worms. His great body is just going to be a little pile of ashes. Nothing less. In this world, the illusion is we think that things are going to last for a long time. But in the estimation of eternal time, which is the only real truth, this little flash of a lifetime is so small. Even in Satya Yuga, where the lifetime was 100,000 years, even that is just such a small life. Even Lord Brahma, who lives 311 trillion years, even his life is just a little flash. What to speak of ours in this Kali Yuga, where we could live at the most 100 years. Srila Prabhupada wanted us to be healthy so that we could utilize this precious human life for devotional service. And he wanted us to be happy doing it. But the balance of finding and giving that happiness of living in this world for Krishna's service should always be balanced with the focus on what is beyond this tiny little lifetime. Because the human birth is especially meant to invest in our eternal future. Mochakunda is expressing the value of the human life. It's the time where we could awaken the eternal soul. A time when we can actually reconnect to the true self beyond birth and beyond death. But unfortunately, the world of Maya is so powerful and complicated that even while having this human life, we become so entangled. And even people, when they fall under the illusion that they are very learned or very powerful, they're constantly being conquered by their mind and senses. Janasya moho yamaham mameti. I am this body. Those people in relationship to the body are my family, and those things that are in relation to this body are mine. And living in this conception, moment after moment after moment, human life, we lose opportunity after opportunity, and then inevitable death will come. What have we gained? Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Human life really begins when we make the serious commitment to the path of self-realization. Srila Prabhupada, in a poem he wrote in Vrindavan, he's looking at all the great personalities of history who've made such a mark in the world. And what to speak of everybody else? You know, in history, how many people have lived in the history of this world? And in some of the books, you know, some of the most prominent people. And after a while, they're forgotten too. He says the most there is just a list of names. Nothing's left of even the greatest conquerors and the greatest prophets and philosophers of the world. Nothing's left except just a list of names. Whether you become a multi-billionaire or whether you become, you know, world famous, still, all that's left is just a name. It's not even a connection with your soul to any of the things you left behind anymore. So Mokshakunda, when Krishna's offering him any benediction, this is his meditation. What's the use? And we find that the only blessing he asks from Krishna is to serve him. Let me completely take shelter of you and let me engage in your loving service. We will discuss this wonderful story in more detail in future days. But now I must catch an airplane to Kanpur for the grand opening of a beautiful temple. Srila Prabhupada in the 1970s sent devotees to Kanpur. He said it is one of the most important cities in India and there must be a temple there. And somebody gave Prabhupada land for a temple. But nobody ever did anything in the land. Years went by, they lost the land. Decades went by. His Grace Devaki Nandan Prabhu was enthusiastic because he saw the letters that Prabhupada wanted a temple in Kanpur. So somehow or other, he got some land, started building. Then he discovered it was the exact same land that was given to Prabhupada. And Radhe Shyam Prabhu, our most illustrious guide for so many thousands of people. And Sri Radhe Shyam Prabhu was very highly respected for his willingness to assist in so many projects all over India and the world. Wherever I go in the world, there's people who were trained by Radhe Shyam and Krishna consciousness who are taking leading positions in America and Europe and Africa and Australia, and especially in India. So Devaki Nandan approached Radhe Shyam Prabhu. How many people you sent there? He sent 14 brahmacharis, select brahmacharis. And together they have a wonderful temple. It's an incredible temple in Kanpur. So you may be asking after the story where we're talking about how everything's so temporary and all palaces are going to turn to dust and all people are going to become ashes. Why bother? Because while we're here, we have to do something. Instead of just making our own houses, we can make temples for Krishna so that so many people could understand the goal of human life, the value of human life. Utilize their beautiful time to go back home, back to Godhead. Because from an objective perspective, this material world is a place of a lot of sorrow. Because whoever we attach ourselves to is going to die. And we're going to die. And whatever we attract ourselves to, we're going to lose it, either in life or in death. It's inevitable. So real happiness is when we deal with the world with compassion. Devotees are not indifferent because of death and time. They're indifferent to, we try to become indifferent to selfish, egoistic, envious propensities. But the human life is so precious and so rare. The little time we are here, there's so much we could do for the eternal soul. And so much we can do to help other eternal souls. So all the time and energy to build temples and do all these things are actually your wonderful investments of compassion. If they're done in the proper state of consciousness. That is why Srila Prabhupada inspired us in this way. Because ultimately, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, whatever happens in this world, Krishna's still playing his flute, standing in his threefold bending form, calling us back into his loving pastimes. And Sri Radharani is always giving us her blessings. As long as they're always doing that, which they are forever, everything's all right. Just chant Hare Krishna. Inspire others to do so. Be happy. Thank you very much.